Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. Good show today. USC quarterback Sam Darnold had all 32 teams at USC to see him throw before the Pineapple Express hit SoCal. Winter Storm Toby bearing down on the East Coast, and for some reason, y'all found interest in that and wanted to talk about it. And bang! Triple G dropped a couple of verbal haymakers, in fact, several, on Canelo Alvarez, Oscar De La Hoya, and the entire tainted meat defense. Terry Stotts of the Portland Trailblazers joined me after that tremendous game last night in the PDX. Billy Kennedy of Texas A&M before the Sweet 16, and Sam Amick of USA Today broke down the association. Oh, and Rick in Buffalo lit a couple of suckers up, ripping another huge call. Big day. Alvy, bang. Go ahead and get it started. After sitting out the throwing drills at the NFL Scouting Combine, all eyes are now on Sam Darnold. The former Trojan quarterback is the headliner at USC's Pro Day, which is going to get underway shortly. All 32 teams are going to have somebody on campus to watch him do something that he would not do in Indy last month. Put on his gym shorts, spin the rock, and shred some air. So, it's his day, his guys, his turf, and his opportunity to set them all up, knock them down, and start house hunting in Cleveland. But, and it's a big but now, on the most important day of his professional life, he's got something that pretty much nobody else has ever had to worry about. Nobody else in his position has ever had to worry about. A Pineapple Express. Now, what's a Pineapple Express? You're probably saying, I think I know what that is. That sounds familiar. I know the term, but I'm not exactly certain what that means. Let me help you out with that. Team Bake can help you out with that. Team Bake just dialed up a 16-inch deep dish and reached for the bong, just thinking about one of the finest blends ever burned. A strain so good that it got a movie named after it.
What's it called?
Pineapple Express.
Pineapple Express.
Yes, it's this thing like El Nino, this airflow that comes from Hawaii and Canada, and it gets the dirt, mixes it in with the weed in a very special way. It's actually very scientific. I won't go into it right now, but I am the only guy in the whole city that has it.
Bake on, brothers. Stay baked. Brother. I hate to do it, but let me just go ahead and end this Cron Fuel dream right now. No, Sam Darnold does not have to deal with a mushroom cloud of tree getting burned before the biggest job interview of his life. He has to deal with a real Pineapple Express, a literal atmospheric river, quote unquote, that is headed straight for SoCal with the skies about to open up and bring down a world of water on a city that can barely deal with partly cloudy skies. The storm is coming. It is no joke. And it's not an LA rainstorm. It's the real deal. The National Weather Service has issued a flash flood watch for LA, anywhere from 2 to 10 inches for a city where 2 to 10 drops of rain will turn the freeway into a parking lot and push the city within brink of martial law. And now, Darnold, you know, Darnold and his team are tracking that storm, hoping he gets his work in before it hits LA. And yes, of course, the haters are out right now. You can hear what they're saying. That's why you throw at the combine. That's why you spin it in Indy. Under a roof, out of the elements, and in the AC. And all the haters who are saying that are right. That is why you throw in a controlled environment, because you can't control what the weather is going to be like for your pro day. You can control it inside of a dome. There are no elements. And yes, it is SoCal. And pretty much every day here is 72 and sunny. Except those days when a freaking hurricane rolls through and jacks everyone and everything in its path. So, unless this guy was dinged, of course, he should have thrown at the combine, but he didn't. And now he's got to deal with an even greater challenge. So, I'm here to help. What this guy needs to do is turn this thing on its head. See it not as a huge challenge, but of an even bigger opportunity. Because what better way to show that you're ready for life in Cleveland by proving it out in the elements? What better way to say you can deal with the cold, you can deal with the wet, you can deal with the wind, you can deal with the winter by literally having the chance to showcase your arm and your arm talent in those very same elements? Bad luck? It might be the best of luck. Bad decision? It might end up being one of his better ones. Remember, Jared Goff won the Rams over when he went out and he dropped dimes in that private workout in the rain up in the Bay Area. A workout that the team expected him to cancel, but he didn't. He showed up, he showed out. Darnold can do the same thing. And the guy's getting set as we speak. He's going to throw regardless, rain or shine, but now he gets to take advantage of a one-in-a-million weather day here in L.A. So, finally, you expected Darnold to light up a workout in perfect conditions under a SoCal blue sky, throwing to his own guys in his own backyard. However, putting on a show in the elements with the wind whipping and a monsoon falling, he might just as well grab the mic after the workout, turn and look at Hugh Jackson and John Dorsey and scream,
"Cleveland! This is for you!"
So, instead of me telling him, "Hey, you made that bed, go ahead and line it," I'm saying, "Hey, Sam, the Browns are holding your lottery ticket. Rip it out of their hands." Refusing to throw at the combine won't mean jack if you can spin it in the next hour. But if you don't, everybody will know why you didn't throw an Indy. Go time, Samuel. Go get yours. And prove to everybody you knew exactly what you were doing when you did throw at the combine. Do that, and then you're the first quarterback off the board. Prove that and tell us that it was a good idea, not the worst idea. Or better yet, hope you can spin it a few times before the clouds do open up. Terry Stotts is my guest. Terry, it's so good to have you back on. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Jim?
Good, Terry. Had a tough one last night. Great game last night to Houston, where you had 17 lead changes. You had 10 ties. They end up icing it in the end. Terry, I know you. I know you hate to lose, but what do you make of the way both teams played last night?
Well, to be honest, it was I thought it was a really good NBA game. I think from a fan's perspective, it was exciting. Both teams played well. There was a lot of offense, big shots, big plays. Came down to the last possession, and James Harden makes some incredible plays at the end. So, I mean, it's disappointing to lose, but for me, we played very well during the 13-game win streak, and we played well last night. We just didn't win.
Terry Stotts joining us. At this point, James Harden, Terry, I mean, the guy looks like he's almost unstoppable. You're not going to stop the guy. How do you approach guarding him and trying to slow him down and making things tough on him?
Well, no one's found the answer to that, but, because of the way their roster's constructed, they got like 9 3-point shooters on their roster, so it's difficult to double. It's difficult to take the ball out of his hands. He's such a good shooter, as he showed last night. He can get to the free throw line, he can get in the paint, he facilitates. So a lot of times it's pick your poison, but and that's why he's probably going to be the MVP, because he's that good. But I think, like most great players, you got to make him work, hopefully wear him down a little bit. You have to be engaged, knowing that he's always a threat, and knowing that he's going to make some great plays as well.
Trailblazers head coach Terry Stotts, my guest. Now, Terry, after the game, Damian Lillard made the point that he felt like he and CJ McCollum struggled, and yet it was still a one-possession game with under a minute to go. So what does that tell you about your depth and your versatility, that your two best players did not have the nights they typically have, yet you were still right there against the team with the best record in the NBA?
Well, I think we've really evolved as a team as far as not just relying on Damian and CJ, and certainly they're still going to be the focal point of our offense and the focal point of opposing defenses. But, if you saw the game last night, Al Farouq Aminu shot the ball terrific. Mo Harkless had an outstanding game. Yusuf Nurkic was, when they switched, was able to take advantage of situations down in the lane. Evan Turner had a solid game. So we got contributions from a lot of different people, and to be honest, over the 13-game win streak, that was kind of the theme. Certainly Damian had some outstanding games that in Phoenix and in L.A. where he kind of carried us in the fourth quarter. But through it all, we've had a lot of good contributions from a lot of different players on our team.
Terry, let me keep you on that point. I mean, you mentioned Chief, Harkless, Nurk, Zach Collins. All these guys have stepped up during that run. How do you as a coach create an environment where guys who have been thought of maybe as role players in the past can expand that role and thrive on any given night when you need it from them?
Well, a lot of it comes from them. You know, they've, for example, a guy like Chief and Mo, they put in countless hours after every practice, after every shoot-around, shooting threes, building confidence to take those shots. And you know, Chief went through a little slump a few games ago and has busted out of it. But it just, these guys are good pros. They're good people. They work hard. And there's a lot of trust that has come out of that. And, you know, I think that showed itself last night.
Clones, the Sweet 16, as you know, gets underway tomorrow. That means you should get started on MyBookie right now. I mean, if you've already busted your bracket, there is still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. If you've not signed up yet, it's not too late. It does not matter if you've been a player for years or you like a team because their colors match their favorite shoes. Lay down some money, score big on college hoops. Join thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you ask for a payout? Come join MyBookie today. You win, they pay. Fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anyplace else. Join now and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. Use promo code ROME and activate that offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. Play, win, and get paid. That's MyBookie. Now, it's back to our Daily Jungle. We're talking to Terry Stotts. You know, you've also gotten a lot of credit for the way Yusuf Nurkic has played. In fact, team president of basketball ops, Neil Oshie, said, quote, some guys you got to hug, some guys you got to kick in the butt a little bit, end of quote. I mean, you got to find a good balance, right, of when Nurk might need that support and maybe when he needs a little bit of a kick in the butt. How do you approach that with him, and what about his evolution this year?
Well, you know, he's had a up and down year, you know, especially coming on the heels of last year when he had such a great 25 games with us and we made that run. So expectations were pretty high. I'm pleased with the way he's progressed through the year. Like I said, it's been a little up and down. But, you know, with him, I think the thing to remember is that he's, you know, he's just 23 and hasn't been playing basketball that long, so the expectations of what he was going to do this year might have been inflated. But I remind myself and our staff that he's a young player, that he has room to grow, and to Nurk's credit, he's been really good to work with. He's a willing learner. He's willing to be coached by me and the assistants, and I think it's shown over the last month. But, you know, coaching is trying to reach your players, and you try and figure out what works best for each player.
We're talking to Terry Stotts. And Terry, the 13-game winning streak was snapped, but that was the team's longest streak since 2007, and it included 8 wins over teams with records above 500. Earlier this season, things were not rolling the way they are right now. So what's the biggest difference now between the way you're playing right now and the way maybe you were playing earlier this season? What changed?
Well, we're playing much better offensively. You know, that was kind of the weird thing about the way our season started. Everybody expected us to, you know, build on our offense. Our offense would be there, and our defense was going to have to improve. Well, the defense improved, and the offense took a step back. But I think starting in January 1st, the offense kind of turned around. And, you know, we had a really good January in large part due to our offense. And since the All-Star break, our defense has gotten back to where it was for the first half of the season. So when you combine good offense and good defense, you're gonna string together some wins.
And Terry, on CBS Sports Network, we've got a graphic up right now of the Western Conference standings. Rockets are 57-14. Golden State's 53-18. I know you're focused on your guys. I know you're focused on what you can control. But as you look at the West right now, are the champs the team to beat until somebody beats them? Or if you look at the Rockets and they're playing right now, maybe are they the team to beat?
Well, I think it's really hard to say. I think usually the appropriate answer is that the champs are the champs. And really, you know, Golden State, with the players they have out, if they're healthy, they're the team to beat. But right now, obviously, they're not the team they were that won the championship because their guys have been out. Clay's out, Steph's out, Durant's out. So they're not the team that won the championship right now. But if they go into the playoffs healthy, they're the team to beat.
Terry Stotts, my guest. Terry, the Cavaliers announced earlier this week that Ty Lue was going to step away for some health issues. As a head coach, you know, you more than anybody know the toll that the travel, the hours, and the pressure can take on a person. What was your reaction when you saw that news?
You know, honestly, my reaction was, you know, Steve Clifford had had his health issues in Charlotte, and my first reaction was, over the years, over the past, you know, in the NBA, how many coaches had issues that just, you know, they fought through and probably didn't seek the help or the medical attention that they needed. It can be grueling. You know, different coaches handle the pressure, handle their job differently. But I just think of, you know, it's all, when there is a crisis, you know, when like the Me Too issue, is that how many people that didn't say anything were dealing with the same issues. So, you know, I feel for any coach who's going through health issues, because it can be rigorous, and you just got to take steps to try and lead a healthy lifestyle.
You know, you mentioned Steve Clifford. I'm shocked that we don't see more of this. I mean, I know it's going on. Without knowing, Terry, I have to assume it's going on, because in the wake of that, David Aldridge tweeted, multiple coaches have talked about literally walking the streets of a city after a tough loss, replaying the entire game in their heads. Sleep is non-existent. I mean, when I see a quote like that or a tweet like that, Terry, it seems to me like NBA coaches, that it seems like a life. It seems like a terrible job. I mean, no credit when you win and only misery when you lose. Does it ever feel that way at times?
You know, I would never complain about my job.
Sure.
I have a great job. I think every coach in the league is proud to be an NBA head coach, and wouldn't trade it for anything. But I've always said, there's not a job in the world that doesn't have you know, pluses and minuses. So I would never complain about the job and you know, the troubles or the difficulties of a job, because we're all very fortunate to have the job.
I get that. I understand that, and I would agree with that. I just wonder if there's a way. There's got to be a way to celebrate some of the success and not fixate so long on the misery or the losses, right? There's got to be better balance.
Well, you would think that there would be, but I don't know if, as Pat Riley said, there's, you know, there's relief and misery. You know, if you win, it's relief, and if you lose, it's misery. And I remember somebody, I think it might have been Bill Shonley or somebody, talking about Jack Ramsey when he was with the Blazers, and he had lost a game, and he's out walking the streets thinking of replaying the game in his mind. So, I mean, this has been going on for decades as far as how coaches approach their job and how they handle the team and wins and losses, and every guy does it differently. But I don't know. The job has changed, I would say, over the years. There's always been pressure, but now with social media and the 24-hour media cycle, it's the game and the job has evolved.
It's a great, great gig, but it's a tough, tough gig. One final thought. I'm glad you brought up social media. When you look at social media, Terry, is your greater concern what your guys are putting out there or what they're taking back in and reading and internalizing?
Probably the latter. I think our guys and you know, the generation of players that are there now, out there now, have a handle on what to put out on social media. We haven't had any issues with, and I think more and more players are less likely to send something out on social media that will get them in trouble. But I do know that there's a lot of bad things out there that, when you can tag a player and they start reading what some guy is saying about you, and some of it is very pointed and very derogatory and mean-spirited. And if you internalize that, it can really get to you.
It's the best and worst thing ever, really. I mean, there's so many things about social media that are so good and so many things that are so wrong. I mean, do you tell your guys stay away from it, or do you just not even bother?
I don't bother. I think they all handle it in their own way. You know, you get – People tweet about you, don't they?
You bet. You bet.
You
know, but I have a strategy for that. And of course they do. Exactly. You know, again, you can't wade into that world if you can't handle that world. If you don't have a thick skin for it, or it's going to get inside your head or under your skin, then don't go there. Don't go to bad neighborhoods. You know, don't go to places where bad things happen if you can't handle it.
Well, I had a friend of mine, and, you know, this was early in the social media, but anyway, there's some blog or some website, some fan forum, and he was asking me a question about why did you do this, and I told him why. He goes, and I wondered why he asked me that question, and it was because of this fan forum that, you know, people were talking about it, and we had won the game. Mm. And he told me, don't ever go to that website. Don't ever go to that website. Stay away.
The Daily Jungle was also brought to you by MyPillow. Hey, clones, you know I'm all about Nap Nation. I'm all about getting sleep when I have to have it. But how can you ever expect to get a good night of sleep if you do not have the right pillow? After listening to your terrible phone calls, I can tell more sleep would do a lot of you some good. No more tossing, no more turning, no more waking up in the middle of the night. Each MyPillow comes with a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and the very best part is you get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-985-3307 and use promo code ROME to take advantage of my special 4-pack deal. Buy two premium MyPillows and get two go-anywhere pillows for free. Once again, go to MyPillow.com or call 800-985-3307 and use promo code ROME to take advantage of my special 4-pack deal. That's MyPillow, and now it's back to our Daily Jungle. So we've got the big fight coming up on May 5th. Canelo Alvarez and Triple G. They're not stepping into the ring until May 5th, but haymakers are already being thrown and landed, at least by one of the combatants, by Triple G. Now, let me set the stage. You'll recall that earlier this month, it was announced that Canelo had failed two tests for clenbuterol last month as part of testing leading up to the fight. As soon as the results were announced, Canelo's camp blamed tainted beef. A very convenient excuse, and one that you could easily eliminate by not eating beef from places where it's been tainted. We know there's an issue there. We know there's an issue with the meat there. If you know the beef is tainted in Mexico, and you know that could lead to a positive test for roids, and you know the entire world is going to think that you cheat, then don't eat the beef in Mexico. It's really not that hard. It's not hard at all. And Triple G, speaking to reporters yesterday, was having none of that. He said, quote, again with the Mexican meat? Come on. I told you, it's not Mexican meat. This is Canelo. This is his team. This is his promotion. Canelo is cheating. They're using these drugs, and everybody is just trying to pretend that it's not happening. End quote. Like, bang. Bang. Bang.
Bang. Bang. Bang.
Bang.
Bang.
Reminds me of Jim Lampley. A fighter landing. Bang. Bang.
Bang.
Almost like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That's the sound it makes. Listen.
This is an Alvin DeLauro production. One of Alvin's finest moments. Bang. Bang. That's what that was. That was Triple G going chitty chitty bang bang on Canelo and his tainted meat excuse.
Bang!
A brutal combination from Triple G. Quote, again with the Mexican meat, snapping off a jab. Quote, it's not Mexican meat. This is Canelo. There's your left hook. And then, Canelo is cheating. They're using these drugs, and everybody is just trying to pretend it's not happening. There's your right hook, and that finishes it.
Bang!
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 And the guy wasn't done. There was more. Quote, this guy, he knows this is not his first day in boxing. He proves he gets benefits from everyone, and he can get away with it. Check him on a lie detector. Then we can find out everything. End of quote. So now you've got Triple G landing one shot after another, one haymaker after another on Canelo's reputation. He's landing at will, and Canelo is not able to defend himself. This guy's taking a pounding. If the ref is not going to stop that fight, then Canelo's corner should. Where the hell is that white towel? And the thing that's kind of amazing about all this is that in the past, Triple G has not been about that life. Not the cheating life, but I mean the media life. Not like that. He's always come across in the media as kind of a polite, mild-mannered guy. There's nothing polite about this. There's nothing mild-mannered about this. This was a guy who generally is not looking to make waves with his words, and now he's dropping bombs. But as fierce as all of that was, he had even more. Triple G then went on to allege that it's nothing new and that Canelo was reaching for these special vitamins before their last fight. Quote, "It was pretty obvious when his muscles were all enlarged and with the traces of injections, which were visible before the first fight. I knew he was not clean. I can talk about Oscar De La Hoya, too. He's also not clean. He's dirty.
Try and stop it. Bang, bang.
Chitty, chitty, bang, bang, Alvy.
Bang, bang.
In other words, not only is my opponent a cheater, not only is my opponent dirty, but his promoter, a legendary boxer, is dirty, too. It's incredible. Even more incredible is the fact that after Triple G was done with the media, he still was not done. Even if he was done with the media, he was not done. He then gets on the phone with ESPN and he adds, quote, "I think it is silly to blame the meat because an athlete at this level should not be caught on the meat. I eat Mexican food all the time. I've never had that problem."
Bang.
End quote. Bang, bang, bang.
You want to throw sometime?
I don't know who's better in that case. Jim Lampley in fine, fine form, or Alvy in fine, fine form, or Alvy and Lamps together.
That's the sound it makes. Listen.
Get it, little Alvin.
Bang. 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 Bang.
Go, Alvy, go.
Bang. 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 Chitty, bang. Bang. Chitty, bang. Bang. You pretty chitty, bang. Bang. Chitty, chitty, bang. Bang. We love you.
You just go ahead and run that, Alvin. I'll finish the thought. Let's recap. Canelo is a cheater who blames Mexican meat. He had traces of injection marks in his last fight. Let me stop right there. Not traces of the drug in his system, but like track marks. Traces of injection marks. Like Triple G's like, look at that guy, man. He shoots up. You can see it. Recapping that. Recapping that Triple G thinks that his promoter, Oscar De La Hoya, is also dirty. And, oh yes, I eat Mexican food all the time, and I've never had a problem. Good night, cheater. Thanks for coming. So by the time Triple G is done, at this point, Canelo's reputation, his reputation, is on the canvas, fumbling around for its mouthpiece, and Triple G is standing over him flexing. And if this meet or this fight was being fought in the media, I'm saying stop the fight. If that fight is fought in the media, stop the freaking fight. Why is that white towel not coming in? Because Canelo is done if it's fought in the media. Not even Adelaide Bird could score that as a win for Canelo. The other side of that is this. Golden Boy Promotions President Eric Gomez fired back and said, quote, "Triple G doesn't sound like a confident fighter. It sounds like he wants to try to find a way out of the fight." End quote. Agree to disagree, Eric. Because Triple G has said that he'll fight as long as there's a fight to be had. He doesn't sound like a guy who's looking for a way out of a fight. He sounds like a guy who's looking for a clean fight and is pissed that his opponent is failing PED tests and blaming beef. That's what that guy sounds like. He does not sound like somebody who wants to avoid a fight. He sounds like a guy who wants to fight right now. Before your dude can shoot up. Slam some more tainted meat. I'll tell you what, I'm ready. Let's get it on right now. Let's have that fight right now. I don't want to wait more than a month for this. Let's do it right now. Let's get it right now. Now that does not sound to me like a guy who doesn't want to fight. That sounds to me like a guy who doesn't want to fight a guy who cheats, allegedly. That does not sound like a guy who doesn't want to fight. That sounds like a guy who wants to fight right this second. I'll be getting nice. Clones, this podcast also brought to you by Fan Exchange. I need you to check out our new partners at Fan Exchange. Are you thinking about buying tickets to your favorite sports, concert, or theater event? Maybe you want to experience March Madness courtside rather than on your couch. Then head on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. No getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. Whether it's March Madness, MLB Opening Day, WrestleMania, Coachella, or a Broadway musical, Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME for 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. That's Fan Exchange. And now it's back to our Daily Jungle. We are joined by Billy Kennedy. Billy, it's so good to have you on the program. Nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So you're in Southern California right now, and we're a little over 24 hours away from a Sweet 16 matchup against a game Michigan team. What's the vibe like among your players and your coaching staff right now?
Well, we're excited, obviously, to be in the Sweet 16, but we're on a mission. It's going to take a great effort to beat Michigan, and they're really a good team. But I think our guys, from being in the Sweet 16 last time, we were celebrating still and not focused on the next game. That's something I think we've learned from our last experience in the Sweet 16.
You know, I know you're focused on tomorrow night, but let me get you to take one moment and take us back to Sunday when you didn't just beat North Carolina, you smashed them in the most lopsided NCAA tournament defeat of Roy Williams' career. Going into the game, Billy, did you have a sense that your team was going to put on a performance like that?
No, I can't say. I thought it was going to be a 20-point win or a game that we would play in that fashion. But I thought we would play well, just style of play in matchups. I thought we had an advantage in the post, and we were able to establish that early, and then it opened up some perimeter shots, and we shot the ball well. So I can't say I expected it, but I expected to play well.
Yeah, let me keep you on that point, because from the start of the season, my sense would be that you knew you could be dominant inside. So what was it like to see that interior dominance show up the way it did when it mattered most against the defending champs?
Well, no, it was an awesome experience. Just to start off, we went inside and to Robert Williams, and then Tyler Davis imposed his will. And it just created so many opportunities for our other guys to get going. But when those two bigs are playing like that and are as aggressive and assertive as they are, then it really makes us a better team.
We're talking to Billy Kennedy. You know, Tyler Davis had himself a night. He had 18 points. He had 9 rebounds and was a big part of your ability to use your size to dominate, as you referenced. But he talked about the way the team stayed together. He said, quote, "We had a certain togetherness today. We didn't have the fastest start, but we were together the whole time." Is that how it felt to you? And did that certain togetherness make a big difference in that game?
Yeah, it's a team that's been through some ups and downs, a lot of adversity. And we went into that game knowing that the only chance we had playing in front of a North Carolina crowd in Charlotte was to communicate and stay together. And they were up 5 on us early. They got a bunch of transition baskets. And then we started imposing our will in the paint. And that was the way we were able to get back in the game and separate with the lead.
Yeah, Billy, let me ask you about that adversity, because it's been a great season, but it did not get off to a great start. It's not been easy in the sense that when you went into your non-conference schedule, you played great, but then you lost 5 games in the SEC, your first 5 games. At that point, where were you as a team, and what was going through your mind?
Well, we were rattled, no question. We lost to Wayne Wilson. He tore his ACL, and he was out for the beginning of the year, and then we didn't have Admon Gilder, so we were playing with 3 freshman guards early on, and we struggled in conference play right out at the bat. And once we got those guys back, we were able to get on track, and fortunately, we stayed together. Sometimes teams split up and go different directions, but this group hung in there, and we got healthy again, and we're able to make this run that we're on right now.
Seems to me that's exactly how that goes, right? You have injuries, you have suspensions. Almost every single team deals with that. You can go one of two ways. Either it's going to galvanize you or it's going to rip you apart. As a head coach, how did you go about dealing with those situations with your players?
Well, we just continued to preach guys' faith, you know, from the beginning of the year, last spring, was we knew we were talented enough and we could be our own worst enemy or we could be our biggest strength. And when we stayed together through that, nobody went AWOL on us, so to speak. And we stayed together. It was God's grace. That's all I can say is that we were able to stay together and hang tough. And because I was concerned about going the other direction too, because it was pretty rough when you lose five in a row after you start off 11-1. You know, everybody's crushing you, and for good reason when you lose five in a row in the SEC, and it's because of suspensions or because of injuries. It's just part of it, but we were able to stay the course.
We're talking to Texas A&M head coach Billy Kennedy. You know, when you reference it like that, over the course of the week, I've spoken with John Calipari. I talked to Bill Self, two of your peers. They both also went through stretches where people outside the program were questioning, how good are you really? So when you look back on the stretches, like the one you had, the one you and I are talking about, when you go through something like that, I mean, can you honestly say that you'd be where you were if you didn't go through that? Would we be having this conversation if you didn't go through what you went through?
No, we wouldn't be here because TJ Starks, we ended up having to play him more, and he's been a big plus for us, just his toughness and his play at the point guard spot. And that would have never happened had we not had the injuries and the suspensions, because he may not have gotten the opportunity when he was called upon. And fortunately, he was ready. And the young guys that did play when those guys weren't playing are now backups and were a big key in making a couple of threes against Carolina, because they got playing time and they got to play through some adversity. And so I think it's all part of it.
You know, for those who don't know, Starks had 21 points, 5 assists, and 3 rebounds against North Carolina. He's just a freshman. I mean, is that the way it is right now? Has the game gotten to the point where you need to count on freshmen to step up on the big stage? Or is he unique in that regard, a different kind of player?
Well, I think it's both. I think he's unique. He's a different kind of player. And in today's world, you're going to have to count on young players because seniors leaving early in the draft and all those kind of things. I think you're always going to be in a position where you're going to rely on your young guys, because there are not a lot of older teams playing in tournament play. The ones who are usually go far.
Finally then, you're back in the Sweet 16, and you've got a tough challenge in John Beilein in Michigan. What are your thoughts when you look at him and his team?
Well, they play different than we do. It's really two opposites. We've got an old school, so to speak, playing two post guys in Robert Williams and Tyler Davis, and they've got two perimeter post guys, Wagner and Duncan Robinson, who are 3-point specialists. And so it's really two opposite teams that are both good defensively and then man-to-man. But offensively, they rely on the three-point line. We rely on getting the ball in the paint. So it's going to be an interesting who can impose their will.
I want to talk about Buffalo Bills wide receiver Zay Jones. Now, if a player like that is trending in March, that's generally not a good thing. And he was last night. And it was not a good thing. Not at all. Just as if you're a football player, and I'm talking about you in March, and it's not about signing a new contract, then that's a bad thing. And if you're a football player, and I'm talking about you in March, and it's about you having what was described as a, quote, nude episode, then that's a terrible thing. Now, before I go on, let me make this very clear. Zay Jones has been on this program. So has his brother, Caleb. I enjoy talking to both of them. We don't really know anybody, but Zay seems like a good guy who had a bad night. A good guy who had a very, very bad night. According to reports, he was arrested Monday night and charged with felony damage to property after an incident involving his brother in an apartment in downtown Los Angeles. According to ESPN, Officer Luis Garcia said that Zay Jones was breaking glass doors and windows when the police arrived. And that's not good, but it gets much worse. Because according to video posted by TMZ, you can see where he was naked at the time. And quoting from the TMZ report, quote, you can hear Zay yelling, I'm going to fight for Jesus. And then according to witnesses, Caleb was trying to stop him from jumping out a 30th floor window. Quote, end of quote. So because I know what you're thinking before you think it, you could stop right there. I know the moment you saw that headline pop up on Twitter, you were already crafting and drawing up your emails about how a Bills wideout has not gotten this much attention since Andre Reed. Or something like, hey, Rome, I'd also want to jump out of a high rise if I had to spend most of my year in Buffalo. You know, things like that. Things that aren't funny. Stop. This is not funny. This is downright disturbing. This is actually terrifying. And if your immediate reaction to this story or seeing that headline is to crack on Jones or to crack on Buffalo, there's seriously something wrong with you. Yes, Jones had a bad night. I'm not going to deny that at all. He had a bad night. We've all had bad nights. We've all had bad nights, and sometimes we look back on those bad nights and we laugh. This night is much worse than your average bad night. And I'm not looking back on that night, and I'm not laughing right now, and neither should you. Nobody should be. When you're naked, allegedly, and you're yelling, I'm going to fight for Jesus, allegedly, and you're trying to jump out of a 30th floor window, allegedly, that's a terrible night. I mean, go ahead, call me a buzzkill. But when that's happening, that does not sound like the kind of bad night that you want to rush in and clown somebody for. A guy was naked, breaking glass, doors and windows, and threatening to jump to his death from a 30th floor window. I mean, hilarious. That's comedy gold. Hey, clones, the jokes write themselves, don't they? Right? Wrong. It's not a case where a guy had one or three too many. A case where it just kind of got away from him. We've all been there. This is different. And while I'm not exactly sure what he's dealing with, I'm pretty certain it might be something that most of us have never dealt with before. Something very troubling. Something that you don't want to rush in and crush a guy for. Something you don't want to rush in and kill a guy for when the guy was threatening to kill himself. When did a guy threatening to jump out of a window 30 floors up become funny? I must have missed that memo. I must have missed that class. I mean, do I really have to say people threatening to take their own lives is not show fodder? At least not in the way you want it to be. I mean, something went very, very wrong that night, and as bad as it was, it sounds like it could have gone much, much worse. I have no idea what happened leading up to that event, but it sounds like Zay needs some help. Needs help urgently, and I hope that he gets it. Just as I hope that if any of you found that remotely amusing, I hope you get the help you need too. So a couple of reasons why I did not get to that right off the top. I probably should have. That to me is not funny. That's not a reason to rush in and crush a guy. Man, that's a really disturbing story. A really terrifying story. He needs help urgently. I hope he gets it. As I said, I've had him and his brother on the show before. Both good guys. But that's a good guy who had a really bad night. And that's not a bad night that he's going to look back at and laugh at. And I don't know why anybody would be laughing at that. If you've seen the video, how are you laughing at that? Sam Amick is my guest. Sam, how you feeling? Always good to have you on. What's up?
Romy, what's up, my friend? I'm up here in beautiful Portland. Doing good. Thanks for having me.
Good, Sam. Great to have you back. Thanks for making time. Great, great game last night. Rockets end up ending the Blazers' 13-game winning streak. I want to get to James Harden in a moment, but overall, what do you make of the way the Rockets played last night?
No, they look great, just like they look, you know, great all year. I can't get over the role players and the guys around, James and Chris, and the way that they've all cemented their identities, they've cemented their rhythm and the chemistry. It's impressive to watch. And one of the things that I've been talking to some of their guys about was kind of the updated perspective on being out in front in the West, which is not obviously what we thought we were going to be looking at this time of year. And then also with the Warriors and their health and how, you know, much of a hit they've taken lately, that, you know, who would have thought that here in mid-March, we'd be talking about Houston having to fight complacency when it comes to being out front in the West. I mean, it seems like they're locked in. You know, they got the job done when it mattered most last night against the Blazers team that's been playing great. And they got a good thing going.
We're talking to Sam Amick. You know, Sam, I had Terry Stotts on the show in the first hour, and we talked about the fact that Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum did not have great games, yet it was still a one-possession game in the final minute. So what's that say about who Portland is as a team right now?
It's a good sign. I mean, I felt like last night as that game started to get away from them a little bit, you were already seeing some of the silver lining because Damian and CJ on most nights are going to get the job done. But when, you know, Aminu is hitting shots like he was, Harkless kind of having a renaissance after a lot of people gave up on him. You know, it's interesting. I think there's a little bit of a parallel between Portland and Houston. You know, Portland's certainly not as loaded as the Rockets, but it's the same theme. It's the same idea that as much as the NBA is this star-driven league and we focus so much on the guys that are all-stars year in, year out, I mean, you've got to have the depth to get the job done. And with Portland, what's impressive, and Terry deserves a ton of credit for this, is that they've just found a way to develop the guys that are on that roster right now. They're pretty limited when it comes to their ability to make moves, to add pieces to this roster when it comes to the way their money breaks down. And so they had no other choice but to, you know, just kind of find life with these guys who are already there, and they're doing that.
They are clearly more than just a big two. Sam Amick joining us. Back to the beard for a minute, Sam. He had 42 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. Guy was absolutely incredible last night. Mike D'Antoni called him, quote, the best offensive player I've ever seen, end quote.
Right.
Now, when you
right.
consider, Sam, the guys that he's coached over the course of his career, it's extremely right. high praise. Is that just a coach coaching his own guy, or is there something more to that?
I think it's, you know, I think it's legitimately how Mike feels. I grabbed him after his group media session and had a little fun trying to challenge him on it and say, wait a minute, you know, like to your point, Romy, like you're not just any old coach. You're a guy who's coached some of the greats. And my read on it is this: James is an incredible offensive player, and you know, arguably, you know, you can put him in that conversation for best of all time. The Kobe thing cracks me up a little bit because I think, and you know this better than anybody, being in LA, like. Let's not forget that Mike did not exactly enjoy his time coaching the Lakers. So I don't know right. that his reflections of Kobe's offensive skill set are, you know, as much nostalgia as there is for the rest of us. The Melo thing is not a conversation that, you know, anymore when it comes to who's a better offensive player, James or Melo. I mean, James is incredible. And, you know, something those guys also talk a lot about from D'Antoni on down is that idea that, you know, yeah, James is great, but the way that Daryl Morey in that front office has built the roster, built the team, has unlocked him in ways that we've never seen before. You got Chris taking pressure off of him defensively, P.J. Tucker, all those guys. It's just a perfect fit for him, and he's a hell of a player.
All right, so one more thought about that. I mean, he's a hell of a player, and he was last year, and he has been. But last year he was dominating and seemed to run out of steam in May, which is understandable, Sam, when you consider the load that he had to carry. Is there a concern right. that could happen again this year? Or with the arrival of Chris Paul and the transformation of the roster, is that no longer a concern?
I just feel like they should not have done a better job of creating a safety net in that regard than the way they did it, by getting Chris Paul, by building the team the way they did. They've got a buffer now that they did not have last year when he fell apart against San Antonio. I did notice, and I, you know, again, and I'm sure you noticed too, that when I talked to Mike, he threw that qualifier in there. He said he's got one flaw. He does get a little tired. And Mike always, I love guys, you know, players, coaches who are deliberate with their words, and Mike is definitely one of those people. And I found it really interesting that at a time when he could have done nothing but heap 100% praise upon James after his, you know, latest incredible game, you know, he threw a little bit of a qualifier in there, which is the fatigue thing is still a factor for James. But to your question, you know, they got Chris Paul, future Hall of Fame point guard, to sit there and pick up the slack, you know, when James gets tired. That's pretty good.
We're talking to Sam Amick. Sam, I mentioned at the top of your podcast, I know you talked to Luke Walton about where the Lakers are right now. I want to get to that in 1 second, but near the end of the conversation, you said that at some point you would stop asking head coaches if they're having fun because they really can't go to that space. When Terry Stotts right. and I talked earlier today, he was saying that it would be good for coaches to be able to enjoy the good moments more than they do. I mean, knowing these yeah. guys and how they're wired and the stress involved, is that just impossible?
You know, hopefully not. Maybe I think this latest stuff with Ty Lue and with Steve Clifford out in Charlotte. These guys need to wake up a little bit. And you know, they all work hard. A guy I talked to the other day, Spencer Brecker is an agent for coaches. And he, an expert on their lifestyle and has a ton of clients and works with Steve Clifford, been doing this for years. And the conversation we had was that, the teams and the organizations and the owners try to build a structure around the coaches where they get their rest and they're as healthy as possible. But these guys are as competitive, if not more, than some of the players. And that means that they don't shut it off. And I think after the Ty Lue thing, maybe they got to learn how to get more balance here because this stuff's not healthy. This is a tough lifestyle. The players, as hard as they work, when they're off, after the game, a lot of times they're shutting it down. They're going to bed. They're getting their shut eye. And the coaches are breaking down film. The coaches are in the room trying to solve the puzzle and find the answers. I think some lifestyle adjustments are definitely needed here.
Sam Amick joining us as part of that same podcast. He told you a story about the arrival of Isaiah Thomas and a dinner that he had, Luke Walton had, with IT right after he arrived. How did that dinner go down?
So Isaiah's coming to Dallas to meet up with the team after the trade, to kind of remind everybody the context at the time. Aaron Goodwin, Isaiah's agent, had texted Rachel Nichols at ESPN on her show, The Jump, and essentially said as they were talking about IT's situation that, he's not coming off the bench. And so it was a very public stance that, this could go south real quick. And so Luke had some mending of fences to do right out the gate, or at least some managing. And so Luke and Brian Shaw and Isaiah go to a steakhouse in Dallas, and to Luke's credit, I'm impressed with the way he handles these guys as humans. And he basically made sure that Isaiah had entree to him to get his views and his perspective, his opinion off his chest right away. Isaiah told him, I don't want to come off the bench. I'm a starter in this league. Luke basically said, I respectfully, not that he disagrees, but just the idea that, there's nothing I can do here. We have a team. We got a thing going. And he kind of, calmed the situation down, got Isaiah to a place where he was willing to be part of the solution, and they've been pretty good ever since.
NBA insider Sam Amick joining us. Hey, Sam, one last topic before you go. Let me step away from the NBA for a minute, talk some college basketball with you, and not just college basketball, but Nevada Wolfpack basketball. Eric Musselman. Yep. Muss and I have been friends for a long, long time. I've known him since he was a 23-year-old GM and coach with the Rapid City Thrillers. I know you covered him when he was head coach of the Sacramento Kings. What was he like back then?
Good coach. I'd be lying to you if I said Muss and I get along a little better now than we did back then. We talk about coaches and lifestyle, and like this is a perfect thread in that conversation. Eric would be the first guy to admit the pressure that comes with being an NBA head coach is challenging. And so, every day he and I were having to have those tough conversations about, the team's not playing, as well as you want, and it was challenging. And I'm extremely happy for him, the success he's had. At Nevada, it's a heck of a story. I mean, he was a guy who was back in the G League trying to find his way and had all of a sudden become, one of the hottest names out there in the college game. The celebration style is just, it kills me. It cracks me up. I love how much fun he's been having and how about once a year these days, we're getting Muss ripping his shirt off and showing off those middle-aged abs that he's been working on. So I like it, man. He's having a good time. It's a great story, and he's a very good coach. And a heck of a family legacy. And that part has been kind of neat from the NBA community is to see, folks kind of get reminded that the Musselmans have done a few things in the coaching world.
Yeah, it's great to hear you say that because you're right. He'd be the first guy to tell you, I'm not the same guy that I was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And the guy really did reinvent himself. He has evolved. Man, how many guys do you know, much less that age, who are going to rip off their shirt, get up on the media table, run in the locker room, start dropping F-bombs, and just, man, he's in the moment. It's a beautiful thing to see.
I love it. I love it. I mean, listen, I can relate. He's got 2 years on me, but I'm in that stage of life and, don't look as good as he does. So more power to him. And he's living up to the last name. You know what I mean? If your name's Muscle Man, you better have a few.
Got
so,
to.
I like it. He's doing his thing.
Rick in Buffalo. I'm not sure of the topic, but I do know the market. Rick, how are you? What's up?
Thanks for having me back in, Jim. No idea about the circumstances surrounding the Zay Jones meltdown, but it definitely wasn't easy to watch. Obviously, the kid needs some help, and like you, I really hope he gets it. Now, it's no secret I despise everything about the University of Michigan's football program, but when it comes to John Beilein and the basketball team, I got nothing but admiration and respect. Beilein's a Western New York native, and no one represents this area better than he does. When he coached at Canisius College in Buffalo back in the 90s, my wife went to high school with his daughter. To this day, she says that Mr. Beilein is the most humble, generous, and down-to-earth human being she's ever met. And we all know my wife's a good judge of character. She married me, didn't she? And earlier in the week, Jim, I heard you talking about your wedding day. So let me tell you a little bit about mine. There was no first dance, no cake-cutting ceremony, and no photographer. That's because I'm not lame, and I hate wasting money. I figured our guests would take enough stupid pictures to last a lifetime. And like always, I was right. And if I'm being perfectly honest, the best part of the day was having a few morning pops with the boys and then kicking my brother's fat ass 24-0 in Super Tecmo Bowl. No hyperbole, Jim. Just the facts. And one last thing. I heard some nobody in New York call a couple days ago saying I sound like I'm holding someone hostage and that this year's March Madness is lacking in quality. The only thing lacking in quality was your phone call, you loser. Try taking another run at me and I will hold you hostage. Don't believe me? Ask Vic and NoCal. I've been holding that bitch hostage all year. Ward John Beilein cutting down the nets come April 2nd. Unwore wood scopes. Maybe it's just me, but I'd rather not spend my Friday night staring at some dude's oversized head. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Rock him. Rick in Buffalo lighting suckers up. Let's go to the phones. You know what I need? A lady clone. Lady clones generally make things better. Face it, their takes are better. They're more insightful, generally more intelligent. Let's go to Naples, Florida. Lauren. Lauren, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Now, you are my idol, man.
Why, Lauren? There's nothing special about me. Trust me.
I'm your clone guy.
What's that mean?
Come on. All right, I want to talk about Michigan basketball.
Let's do it. What about Michigan basketball?
Yeah. Well, we're doing pretty damn good.
You are, Lauren. You're doing awesome. They're doing awesome. You're doing awesome. I'm your idol. You're my clone. Man, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Nothing could be better, really.
Can do what?
I said nothing could be better. You do what? What's up? What else you want to talk about?
I want to talk about how Michigan can make it to the Final Four.
All right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to help you out with that. Thank you, Lauren. Good talking to you. Nice to meet you. See you. Bang! What a tremendous day that was. Thank you for your kind words about Ep 29 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Eric Weddle. Thank you for trusting both the podcasts. Now get back here tomorrow. I'll see you then, because right now I am out.